a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
After I got yelled at for that, I've got to find something to do. Well, so I have my headset on, and I'm actually making teeth now, which I can do except for a beep now and then. So you won't hear me chewing or anything.
Well, I'll tell you what, Perfect. Rob. I would let you eat while doing a podcast, but you're
I'm
a chomper. You're such a chomper. You like chomp like a billy goat. Welcome back, Rob. We're here. Hi.
Hey, I'd like to say hi to all the thousands of people out there listening. You know, that's great. I thought it was like 100. I didn't know it was 1,000.
I'm gonna get
all nervous now, Nate, and stuff.
We missed you. Did you know that? We missed you.
Well, I was on sabbatical.
Would you like to talk about it?
An unpaid sabbatical.
Your entire life is an unpaid sabbatical.
You know, I pick people who are going to use me. Did you know that? You know people like that?
No.
That you pick friends who you know at some point are going to use you. It's like picking the woman that could probably be the worst possible choice in your life, you know, and keep doing it over and over.
I'm not sure what to think of that, Rob. I'm just not sure what to think of that.
Well, maybe we'll get an extra 100 listeners now because of that.
It's possible.
Trying to figure that out, what the hell that meant.
I think we're going to get 100 listeners just because you're back.
You know, people got to realize that there's a lot of podcasts out now, and everybody's doing a podcast. They have like 5 to 10 people writing scripts for them. And you have a director and an editor and a choreographer, and we got nothing. I don't have a piece of paper near me. You do everything.
What I want to know, Rob, is how do you know what a podcast even is?
Well, until you called me and asked me a year and a half ago, I didn't have a clue.
Well, I'm pretty sure like 3 or 4 months ago, is that what you've been doing on your time off? You've just been going out there and researching what a podcast is?
I do not listen to podcasts. I don't listen to them. I can't say I've never listened to a podcast because you forced me to listen to one of ours one time.
It was awful, wasn't it?
So no, it wasn't awful. No, I actually liked it. No, it wasn't awful at all. In fact, I liked it so much I didn't listen to just part of another one.
And that was it. That was enough.
And yeah, since then, no, nothing. I haven't listened to a podcast.
All right, Rob, well, you've been gone for about, 4 months now? Would you like to explain to everybody why?
Well, it's just I needed a break is what I did. And then the virus was, you know, interfering with most things that are interesting to talk about. Well, where our subject matter on this podcast is how other people are playing and what their matches are going to be and what the chances of this guy's going to win or that guy's going to win and why he lost or why he won. And so, you know, it's about the current nature of the game. We don't philosophize about pool too much. And so without that going on, you know, we're kind of lost in space on a pool podcast when pool halls closed down. And even now, with the state of affairs now, I don't know how it is on the cities there, Demi. You'll have to let me know because they've got some bigger type rooms there. How they're dealing with that?
Oh, hey, I'm sorry, Nate. Are we on? Is this live?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I wasn't even sure. Hey, guys. Well, good to talk to everybody again. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, the cities. I mean, they've got some events going on. They've got the pool rooms are open, and there are some tournaments, but there's still a large chunk of the population that's not, you know, feeling comfortable going in, especially with where we're at. You know, today is November 10th. I mean, things are not exactly at you know, total standstill in terms of COVID spread. So, I mean, I'm not going into busy, crowded pool rooms and playing Friday night tournaments with, you know, a big group of people bustling around ordering drinks. That's not where I want to be. And I think a lot of people feel that way. So the turnout is still, it's there, but it's, you know, I don't know. And then there's definitely not a lot of major, you know, events going on around here. The one that we had at Big Dogs, of course, was rescheduled for next month. And, you know, it's hard to know if these things are even going to happen. You know, Turning Stone, Mike Zuglin, he's got some health issues, and I'm not sure if that's going to happen. And I still have some doubts about Derby. So both locally and nationally, I think it's kind of similar, which is people are trying to get things started, and it's just kind of sputtering, and some events are sticking and some aren't. And, you know, it's a little intermittent. It's, you know, sporadic, a little stuttery right now all over.
Yeah, well, you can pretty much see the last couple of weeks I traveled up north and part of the state of Wisconsin and back to here a couple of different times. You know, it's 4 hours in a car both ways, and so you're stopping and you're seeing other people and things. And from what I've seen, in a general attitude is to err on the side of caution with the virus in Wisconsin, in places like gas stations, restaurants, of course, not so much taverns and that kind of thing.
It's amazing. It's amazing the correlation. Go ahead.
How many taverns are there in Wisconsin? Wisconsin is known for its beer drinking. That we're known nationally, maybe internationally, besides for the Netherlands, for our beer drinking. And what do we have? The top 8 cities out of the top 12 in the United States?
Yeah. And of course,
for beer consumption, I mean,
of course, with alcohol mixes bad decisions as far as getting close to people. So, well, Rob, you also had a health scare, of course. If you would like to talk about that, you can. I'll give you the opportunity. If not, then. Go ahead.
I'd just like to say a couple things, and this I think is really important, and I've talked about this earlier on last year on a couple podcasts, that pool players, as we age, we have physical problems. We have ailing backs, necks, shoulders, hips, what have you, and even younger players go through the same things, maybe due to injury, due to age, due to some type of a disease that's affecting certain parts of your body. I just cannot recommend enough a treatment called proliferation therapy. It absolutely cured me after I was told I would need neck surgery to be better. That is titanium pieces placed in your neck, major surgery. And it fixed me. I'm a living example of this other type of more holistic type of a treatment for a lot of tissue issues. You know, you think of nerve pain as being the nerve is causing the pain, so everything around the nerve hurts. That's not necessarily true. What happens is because there maybe was some nerve pain, the surrounding tissue then becomes injured. That injured tissue then creates an atmosphere where the nerve becomes even more inflamed and more hurtful. So with proliferation therapy, the idea is that if you heal the tissue that surrounds the nerve and create new healthy tissue, the inflammation in the nerve will go away. And that theory is reality, and it works for all different parts of your body, your hips, your shoulders, your elbows, wrists, your back, your neck. I know pool players with back, neck, and shoulder issues. I mean, we're not unfamiliar with that kind of thing. You hear it all the time. A friend of yours, he's got to take a month or two off because maybe his lower back is bothering him, or his hip, or some other thing. Proliferation therapy, it's called. It's not new at all, but if you ask an MD that you go to and see regularly if they've ever heard of it, they're going to say no. They probably haven't. And that's what's so amazing. And the reason it's not as available or popular, I would say, but it can be in certain areas of your body where you have it done, like your shoulder. Sometimes they have to go inside your shoulder fairly far to get to the point where they need to get to. Yeah, that needle's pretty long. But when they work on your neck and your back, no, that needle's short because they don't have to go deep. So where was I now? I was just about to get done with this whole thing.
I don't know.
And now, because you interrupted me perfectly, then now I forgot my train of thought.
Isn't that my job?
That happens with age also. It happens more and more all the time. You just forget where you were when you're talking. Not good on a podcast, actually.
That's all right. We don't edit anymore, so this just is going to stay in now. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and that's fine. But this is I have asked in the last, because I've been doctoring for some other things the last 3 months. I asked every single MD surgeon otherwise if they'd ever heard of proliferation therapy, and none of them had even heard of it. And when I asked the MD that I went to for this treatment, was a real doctor, his answer was, is because it's not covered by insurance.
Makes sense. Yeah, if they can't make money off it, it doesn't exist.
Exactly. This is a better treatment. It's more successful, but it's not covered by insurance. You got to pay cash out of your pocket for it.
Yeah.
And
that's how this world works.
Oh, my good Lord. How can this be? How can this happen when if you walk into this guy's office, he has a book laying there that's about 4 or 5 inches thick with handwritten personal testimonies from patients he's had who are cured of their pain.
Rob, I'll jump in and say I don't want to name names. I know somebody that's a pool player that had enough shoulder issues to where it was becoming chronic pain, had to take some time off the game, and did this exact thing, and is now in a very careful recovery. Their shoulder feels totally better. They're supposed to be playing at like 10-20% the normal volume, but they feel like they're following everything they say because they went through a lot of work. And
right.
But they're like, yeah, I'm taking it easy. I'm not going to rush back into this, but their shoulder feels great. And they feel like if they didn't know better, they would think that it wasn't even an issue at this point. And they're still in the like phase, week two of like a 6-week recovery. Yeah. So I will just echo that. For people that don't have any injuries, this might sound boring, but like there's, for anybody, this is like life changing for people that are struggling for their livelihood and struggling to play a game they love. So yeah. I appreciate you bringing it up.
And there's one thing that I have learned with this type of treatment, that after you feel good and you feel fine and you're not in pain anymore, go back and have one more treatment.
Mm.
Just do it. Even though you're not in pain and it's going to cost you, but do it, because if you do, now you're not going to have pain for a whole long time and maybe forever. There's a percentage of his patients that I asked him, this particular doctor, what's your percentage of success with people that you see all the time that come back? It was 100%. 100% improvement. Some not 100% improved, but 100% of the people that came back for continued treatments until enough treatments were done where you're going to be where you're supposed to be, it was 100%.
Interesting.
Some were only,
is this what I get to look forward to?
Yeah. Well, no, this is just and that's besides what was going on with me for 3 months. I've been carrying this blood virus around with me and you hear it on TV all the time, for 30, 40 years, and it was starting to affect other parts of my body. So I just got it fixed.
Yeah.
Well, and the fix worked. So. Yeah.
Well, we are glad to have you back, Rob.
It's nice to be back. I mean, even though our subject matter is limited, we're going to do what we can today. We each got 3 things to talk about. So let's go.
Yeah. And that is a prelude, I guess, to what we are going to be talking about, with which is pretty much nothing. But we all have one thing that we wanted to discuss, and it is not exactly pool. Well, I guess they're all pool related in a sense, but they're not current events kind of things. But before we do that, I will say that we actually have a new sponsor to the podcast. And this sponsor to the podcast is actually live, and it is going to be a lot of fun in a weird kind of way. So we are now, the Cue It Up podcast is now going to be sponsored by Manscaped. Rob, do you even know what that is?
Okay, you asked me this before about a week ago, and I had no idea. But I know there are things that are a special type of tools that will trim your beard so that it looks like you have a 4-day growth, whatever those are called.
Yes, it is.
I would use anything like that, but I mean, they're popular now with grooming and whatever. So yes, that something to do with grooming.
Yes, you are referring to the Lawnmower 3.0. Very great piece of technology, which, Rob, guess what? You're going to be getting no matter what. Isn't that exciting?
Well, I have a very, very heavy beard. Very heavy, thick.
I'm telling you what. You and Demetrius are both going to be getting yourself a Lawnmower 3.0. Well, Demetrius, are you excited at least?
I am very excited. I'll tell you what. I've had a number of electric razors and stuff, and there's like I've had issues with battery. I bought one that I got the thing. It was a recharge. You know, you put it on the charger, and I guess – I don't know. I mean, you overcharge the thing. I left it on the charger overnight. I came back to use it the next day. It never charged up again. And they said it was like, it was just garbage at that point. You couldn't do anything about it. And then it's like, I've had some that are plug-in, so I don't have that issue. But then you've got the issues with how flexible they are, how quick they work. Can you, whatever. Just, I've never really found one that I've always had, you know, electric razors that I can use, but I've never found one that's like, solve the problem. I've always been on the market, so I'm really looking forward. Obviously, they've kind of, this is their flagship, this is their niche. They're looking to, I'm looking forward to seeing what it works, how it works.
Yeah.
Well, you use it on your whole head.
Yes.
Most people just use it on their face.
Well,
I can't get enough, man.
You can use these things anywhere, which of course we will be talking about in the future. We are just going to introduce this today, but in the future, once we actually get the razor and actually get a chance to try it, I've been growing out my hair now, my beard hair, for pretty close to 3 months, just prepping for this moment. If anybody who knows me knows that I now have 7 beard hairs, so it's getting pretty serious now. It's getting pretty serious. But if you're already sold and you want to try this, basically what we're doing is we're running a 2-week trial to see if the Cue It Up podcast is a good fit for them. So if you have been looking forward to getting a new razor and wanted to try to get one, you could check out manscaped.com and you could get 20% off plus free shipping with the Cue It Up code, or well, the code Cue It Up. No spaces.
No, let me ask you a question. Is this something a woman can use too?
Sure.
Oh, so
probably.
It's just
I don't know. One of the ladies.
Just start making stuff up.
I'm thinking about just like.
So I've had sales managers that trained me like that. Just of course, you know, of course it does that. Just order here. Side hard. Bottom copy is yours.
Well. I don't know.
Well,
I guess I could do that, huh?
Think faster than that.
Of course, I should say. We've been talking. Well, we've been talking about like shaving your beard with this.
Yeah.
We're gonna talk about more of this in the future, but the Manscaped is more for the, I guess, the man area. We're gonna get back to this. We're gonna talk about this a lot more in the future once we get it and try it out. All right. But if you're sold already and you want yourself a great electric razor, check out manscaped.com and use the Cue It Up code, Cue It Up, or the promo code, Cue It Up. Get yourself one of those. And if we get enough of them, they are going to long-term sponsor the podcast, which means more income for us to actually do the stuff that we want to do here. All right.
That would be nice. What if I had an observation about electric razors? A general observation.
I don't know.
Because I've used electric razors all my life.
Well,
and there is one similarity that it is a negative similarity between all electric razors I've ever used. And some are better than others, but I won't even name brands. I'll just say one thing. I'll make one comment on them. They don't shave. They don't go fast enough. They're too slow. They got those little cutters. They got to go twice as fast as they go.
Yeah, the engine, the motors on them are pretty weak, and some of them, some of them aren't waterproof. You know, you're trying to do two things at once. You end up looking at like that guy in Green Mile. You know, you don't need that. You got to go manscaped, baby.
Well, these are waterproof.
Listen to this.
That's what I'm saying.
I ordered some blades from China one time, so you could get like 50 blades for $10. It was as if when I put these blades in, that somebody was taking a knife and pulling the hairs on my face out one at a time. That's what it was like.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It was
Who hasn't been there, man? That's so funny.
It was so painful. I put one blade, it was so painful, I just quit. I went, well, I can't do this.
I got to mute this.
All right, we're going to move on from this. We're going to talk about this more in the future, of course, because they are a sponsor to the podcast now. So we want to, of course, make their investment worthwhile, and hopefully we can help them out and they can help us out. We'll all have a great day with some great new razors. All right, let's move on. We have also a Patreon update. We have two additional Patreons to the podcast this week. So thank you very much to Andrew Silverman and Amy Barman, I hope I pronounced that right. Amy just basically wanted access to the Monday Night Lessons, I believe, although she did just begin listening to the podcast. So welcome to the podcast. Huge shout out.
Andrew Silverman, I think I know him.
Andrew Silverman. Well, they're from Georgia, so I don't think so.
Huh.
But maybe you do. Who knows?
Well,
I do want to thank both of you, and of course, if you would like access to the Monday Night Lessons as well, or you just want to help support the podcast, or you want the other little perks that you get, like the insider information and some swag items, of course, you can join the Patreon as well at patreon.com/queueitup. We'll also have that in the show notes for easy way of finding it. Nice hiccup, Rob. Nice hiccup.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did it again.
It's all right. All right, we will move on from that, and we will go into our shout-outs. Rob, you've been gone for so long, you better have the best shout-out ever.
Well, this is just going to be a quick shout-out because in this viral age we're in, there is a kind of an ebb in an area of the Twin Ports in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin. The Top Hat Tavern is... they do have a lineup of pool tournaments coming up every month. There's something happening there. So there is a place to go where the numbers of the COVID are actually down in that area. And there is a lot of precautions in that area. Every place you go in has hand sanitizer. They all have distancing regulations. They have a lot of places where there was a lot of folks I saw in this pool hall that did have masks on the last time I was up there and in there. So I'm going to give a shout out for Jeff. And of course, every time they have, if there is an incident and there has been some, they close the place down, they sanitize it, and that kind of stuff before they open up. So they're very careful that way. And he's a very conscientious, Jeff and his wife, Wendy, Shalene, they're super conscientious people. And of course, pool advocates. So that's my shout out to Jeff and Wendy Shalene.
Perfect. All right, Demetrius, would you like to go next?
Yeah, I think we've kind of done this before, but it just, I feel like when COVID first came out, we were really recognizing the room owners that are kind of fighting the good fight to keep business flowing. And you just mentioned a couple there.
You are not about to Rob, steal my
and
shout out.
I was thinking about, so for those that don't know, Fargo Billiards just announced that they're closing. So I kind of wanted to shout out to Mike Page. Fargo Billiards was undoubtedly the most beautiful pool room back in its heyday. When I went in there, I've written about it. I've talked about it. That's where even my boot camp started, is when I would do my pool training. I'd go up there for 3 days just to be in that, I'd get a private room up there. And just anyway, it's a really kind of sad that that one's closing. So I wanted to shout out for Mike Page for what he's done for Poole. What he's done, of course, he's also the creator of Fargo Rate. So he's just, he's a huge influential Poole supporter. But I also wanted to share the shout out with all the Poole room owners that are, you know, that are getting through this and finding ways to keep going. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm going to double up on that shout out. Of course, Mike Page is going to be mine as well. Mike Page does, like you said, the Fargo Rate. And I'm telling you what, by the end of this, I think in 20 years, we're going to be looking back. And there's a lot of people that push back on Fargo right now, or Fargo Rate right now. And they're like, well, yeah, it doesn't really mean anything, rah, rah, rah. And that's cute and that's fine. Let's just take a look at pretty much all these matchups. And let's just look at the Fargo Rate and see what it predicts. And let's see if Fargo's right more than you are. Fargo Rate is right way more than it's wrong. And I think in 15, 20 years from now, we're going to look back on this. And I don't think it's the Fargo Rate that we're going to look at. It's, I mean, if we get to the point where everything's a handicap tournament and it's completely segregated and, you know, we kind of grandfather out our players once they get so good, you know, that might be a bad thing. But I don't think that we're going to look back at Fargo and be like, that was the catalyst. I think that's a tournament director thing more than anything. And a lot of it is those people show up and play. And they'll only show up and play if they're in a tournament of their peers. So at the end of the day, we've had this discussion a lot, whether we think that these Fargo capped events are good or bad. But regardless, I don't think that we're... In 20 years, I guess really what I'm looking at is we're going to look back and say that Fargo really revolutionized and brought pool to the 21st century and really made it. It really brought analytics to the game of pool in a way that nobody has done really in the last, I don't know, 40 years of this game. It's really been, the game now is basically the same as the game back in the 80s and 70s, minus, you know, some engineering into the carbon fiber shafts, jump cues, stuff like that. But I think that the Fargo Rate really has been a huge step forward in the pool world. And I mean, I just can't echo enough the great work that Mike Page does in this game. And of course, yeah, he's been on the podcast in the past, so I appreciate that. But I really, you know, I really echo what Dimitri said. Mike Page is great for pool, and it's sad to see Fargo Billiards gone.
That is sad. Yeah. I just had a pool playing friend who's been playing pool all his life. He's like in his early 60s. He just called me and asked me what Fargo Rate was. And it's, he's a player in Wisconsin. He never really even had ever even heard of it.
It is getting out there more and more and more.
Yeah, and I just went, you don't know what Fargo Rate is? And no, he says, no, explain it to me. Why is it? What is it? Well, what's it for?
5 years ago, that would have been a normal question.
Yeah, 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 very possibly. But I was kind of surprised. Because the guy, he's a pretty, I think if I was going to put a number on him, he'd be 600. So he's not like he's weak. You know, he's a good player.
All right, well, we will move on from our shout-outs. And we are just basically, we have three things that we all want to talk about. So I don't know, who wants to go first? Don't all jump at once.
Rob, why don't you kick off with your conversation about pool and billiards?
Yeah, I do. And then I do want to add one other thing, too. I you know, I think we get listeners out there who aren't all 700 or better. I mean, there's a lot of variance out there in ability. And I had an experience one time where I was in a tournament. It was a partners tournament, and we were playing the team of, if you've ever heard of these guys, Jamie Barracks and Chad Vilmot. That was the team we were playing against. And I was sitting there, and the chairs were all, they weren't separated. There were four chairs for the two sets of teams there. And Jamie had missed a shot in a game during the match. And he came and sat down next to me. And I mean, I said, "Holy cow! That's a shot. You don't miss that shot very often. What happened there?" And he just kind of shook it off and shook his head, and like, I don't know what happened. He was kind of like just perplexed at why he missed that shot, and he said, "Yeah, that, you know, that particular shot, that's kind of like that spot shot I used to practice." And I went, What kind of spot shot? He said, well, on a regular 9-foot table, I'd put the ball in the spot and set it up and shoot it until I missed. And he said, my goal was 200. And I looked over at him, and I just kind of, giggled a little bit. I went, no, no way. I mean, you're kidding, right? He goes, no, I'm not kidding. I said, you'd set up 200 spot shots, and you'd shoot until you got to 200 before you stop. I said, you'd get to 195 and miss, and then you'd start over? And he went, yeah. Well, you know, I think he is an excellent player. I mean, I don't know if you get too much better than he was. And I thought about that for a long time. And what I finally have come to realize is if you want to get that good as he was or is, that's exactly what you have to do. You have to be willing to do those types of things, to make a goal that's way high and then do it until you achieve it. It's kind of like Johnny Schmidt did, you know. But the other thing I want to talk about, that's mainly for people who are out there. They want to get better. They can't quite get better. They don't know why. Well, listen to that story. That's how you get better. And that is total dedication. But what I wanted to talk about was my passion now has been the last 5 years, three cushion billiards. And it still is pocket pool. I love pocket pool. Love everything about it. But I did notice one thing just recently about the two types of pool, the tables without pockets and tables with pockets. And what I noticed was this, that when you're playing a pocket pool, you're usually playing a race to a number. And each game you play has a certain amount or number of balls or type of balls to make or a pocket to make them in or something in that respect, so that as you're in the game, you're thinking in terms of the end of the game, along with each shot you have to make, of course, to get to that end of that game. And there's a little similarity with billiards. You have a score that you have to get to at the end. You're playing the 25 or 40 or 15 or whatever that score is, like straight pool. But all of a sudden it hit me. When it was my turn to shoot and I got up on that table, I thought about what it was like in 8-ball to make 6 or 7 very nice position shots and then get to the 8-ball and not be quite right on it. And now the whole game, maybe a race to 7 match, because it might be hill-hill, or it might be the first game of a run of 5 more, you don't know that, all of a sudden becomes everything. It becomes the whole world to you, that one shot. And now I'm in this billiard game and I'm going, I feel that way, and that feeling of being elated, knowing that if I make this 8-ball, it's the 8-ball of the 4th rack I've run, or 5th, or 6th. Only this is my first turn at the table. It's the first ball I'm shooting in a run of 5 racks of 7 balls in each rack, if you're playing 8-ball. Only it's my first shot. I got up to the table and I looked over at the guys I was playing with and I went, you know, I'm as pumped up right now for one turn at the table in this game of three cushion billiards as I am if I've just run 3 racks of 8-ball and I've got one shot left to make it 4. And I went, that's huge. That's just a huge difference. It's what you play for. Only now it's every single turn. Otherwise, you get in, and I had said to Nate earlier when we talked today that You know, for pocket pool, you have two balls you're concerned with, really. The cue ball and the ball you're going to pocket. And those other balls on the table, yeah, okay, there's a lot more story to that, but that's it. You got a thing in your hand that you're going to point at a ball to hit another ball in a hole. And if you add that all up and you play really good position and you do some other things in your game that is really good, all those point the stick, hit a ball, to pocket a ball are going to be easy shots. They're all going to be a little natural, little inside three railers. They're all going to be shots that you know you're just not ever going to miss this shot. I mean, you've got it where it's not the same in three cushion billiards.
Well, you know what, Robbie? You know what that kind of reminds me of is originally they played straight rail billiards. So, you know, where all you'd have to do is hit both the other balls with your cue ball. Yep. And then it got to the point where I think it was Walter Lindrum, where people got so good. Like they had the game solved to where they could do the rail nurses. They could herd the two other balls, trap them against the rail, and just go tap, 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 tap. And they could score hundreds and even thousands of points just kind of bumping into these two balls. Now, if you could think about that from both a player and an audience perspective, watching somebody just tap two balls for hours, that doesn't sound very exciting. So then what they did is they changed it to bulk line billiards. They drew lines on the table. They said, okay, and they actually did this because Walter Lindrum was so dominant, they had to change the rules to keep the game competitive. So they said every so often, every so many points, you have to drive one of the two balls across this line. That way it limits how much they can nurse these balls around. And then that didn't stop them. So then eventually, I don't know exactly. I mean, I don't know the evolution of billiards, but now, of course, three cushion billiards, it prevents any of that. And so what I would say is when you're talking about how pool involves so many routine shots, pool, like rail nursing balls on the rail, I mean, playing eight ball.
Yes.
To me, if you're playing good eight ball, it's a really, really, I'm not going to say it's a boring game, but most of the shots that you're shooting, like you're saying, are very, very, you're trying to, the whole
basis of playing good pool and playing good eight ball. It's a game of percentage. It's a game of avoiding risk. It's a game of safety valves and easy shots and good cue ball and tight quarters. And I mean, it's pretty when it's played well. It's a whole game of keeping it really, really easy and doing things simple. And so So it's kind of like rail nursing. It's like you're just kind of doing simple stuff again and again and again. Yeah. Whereas in three cushion, you are going to get to shoot shots that are like really artistic, really creative stuff that you would never get you never have an excuse to shoot that in pool. And I can understand your point. Like when you kind of come up with an idea and say, I wonder if I could have it still spinning the wrong way off the third rail and it flattens out into that ball. But you don't never get to try that stuff, even in one pocket. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I think it's interesting for the audience to hear that when you change, you know, the game you select, it does, you know, you have to ask yourself, is the game I'm picking a game about putting in, like you said, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shots on spot shots a day? Is it a game of shooting easy shots millions of times to fine tune your edge from 98 to 98.5% on easy shots? Or is it a game where you get to try lower percentage shots and be artistic and take chances and play aggressively? And I think that, you know, that's the kind of difference between, you know, and I think that's why a lot of people like nine ball in one pocket over, you know, straight pool, is because straight pool is a game of doing easy things at a high clip, whereas these other games you get to see a little bit more, you know, lower percentage shots and artistic shots, and three cushion is kind of the king daddy of all that.
The other thing I really like about it is the, you know, the leaps we make in pocket pool, I call them skill leaps, and you see it between A and B players, B and A, double A and master, 700s and 800s. I mean, you see these. They're, some are larger than others. Of course, the weaker you are to start with, the bigger the leaps are. And the same thing happens to three pocket billiards. I mean three rail billiards. The leaps you make if you're say a one average, between a one and a 1.2. is not near as big a leap between a 0.5 and a 0.7. It's still 0.2, right? But that leap is, in competitiveness speaking, is big. I mean, that's a
Well, just think about the difference between a 0.2 and a 0.
Yeah, right. No, that really puts it in perspective. Like, you can't make a billiard, or going to make two every 10 shots anyways, you know? So yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's kind of what I'm talking about. And I just saw it in action in this Minneapolis three cushion tournament that they had. A fella went in there thinking he doesn't know how much better he is than he was a year ago. Cause a year ago he was like a 0.5. Now he's a 0.75. And I was telling him before he went to the tournament that you're going to come in third place in this tournament. No worse than third. Because you don't realize how much better you are, those 0.2 of a point, between a 0.8 and a 1, or a 0.5 and a 0.7. There's a big difference there. You're making more, you're starting off making more shots right away. And so that was kind of fun to have him come back from that tournament and say, gee, you know, you were right.
Out of curiosity, as somebody who doesn't play three cushion at all, in fact, I'm that 0.0 that you were describing.
You're probably like a 0.25.
I don't know.
Never playing before. I would say that. You are with your pocket playing skill and your rail.
I'll say this.
You might even be higher than that.
If you tell me the shots, I'm sure I could hit them, but I don't know the shots. Yeah, I don't know the shots.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I know that 1.0 is like really good. In fact, like 30 years ago, that would have been like professional level. I know for the most part that that's like a low end kind of pro now. What is kind of top of the line? Who's the Joshua Filler, Fedor Gorst of three cushion billiards today? And what is his average or her average?
Well, you probably got a half a dozen that are all in the same category.
Okay, so then maybe a better...
Danny Sanchez and players like him. There's Sagari and...
So then the question becomes, what's their average?
Okay, an overall average for these guys, I'd say a daily average is somewhere between 1 and 2.
Well, that's a big range.
But they can play to a 6 without too much trouble. You can see, I think what it Friedrich Cadron has a video out there, a couple videos where he just gets on the table and runs 12, boom, 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 real fast. In fact, he's doing it, he's trying to do it within a minute or something, run 12, and he does it.
Yeah, usually the guys that, you know, oftentimes the guys that win a tournament will average over 2 for the entire tournament. Like, there's people that have averaged like 2.5 or 3 for an entire tournament. I don't know what the record is, But you know, there's and what I would say that I think is kind of interesting is there's a huge, huge, huge jump between like top regional players and like the absolute best international players. And I would say it's a similar jump to what you see between regional pool and top pool. And so it's like, if you think about, you know, so if you look at how many racks of 10 ball I can break and run, it's like, well, I struggle with the break. I struggle, you know, the game. I don't play the game as well as Filler. I don't break as well as Filler. And so when you look at like what I can do from the break, whatever, say it's, you know, 10-15% break and run playing 10 ball. Okay. Well, then you get these guys that are 40%, 45%, where they're putting together 8 packs and 10 packs and stuff. And it's like, I could play a race to, you know, I could play a race to 11 and run 1 rack for the break. They might play a race to 11 and run 5 racks of the break. In fact, that's typical. And so it's like, that's the difference between, you know, kind of like you could walk at any three cushion billiard area in the U.S. and watch some of the top regional players. And you're going to see, you know, 1.0 averages. And it's just, mind blowing that these people can average, you know, 2.5 to 3 throughout a tournament and put together these runs.
Here's the other thing that I've seen about it. This is with, in particular, my play, but other people's play also that I've watched play. Players who are, say, moderate, say I'm like a, would be a low A player in pocket pool with my equivalency now with my three cushion play. And a low A player, it's pretty tough to play like a 700. Pretty tough. Not going to happen. But in three cushion billiards, it can happen. And that's what I've seen also, is that I've say my pool play number now is whatever, 640, 650, something in there. That my chances of playing like at 830 are pretty slim. But I've had matches in three cushion war I've played at 1.5. Well, that's as good as these guys, pros who win the tournaments, that play between a 1 and a 2. So there, it seems to me there is a more opportunity to play at any one particular game of three cushion billiards at a pretty darn high level, much more so than that guy who runs, that B player who occasionally runs three racks or four or five. It doesn't happen too often. He's probably not really a B player if he does.
Yeah. All right. Well, is that that wrap?
I done?
Well,
I mean, I don't have a script in front of me, so you know what that means? There's no end.
I end everything.
Okay, so you're the end. All right.
All right, Demetrius, you want to talk about your isolation on pool players?
Thanks, everybody, for listening. That was
maybe Demetrius doesn't want to talk about it.
Oh, I'm here. I'm here. Sorry. It just took me a second. No, I've had some questions from listeners, and I wanted to, yeah, I just kind of was thinking about this because there's a lot of pool players across the country right now putting in a lot of hours practicing at home by themselves. And of course, we all try to, you know, have a friend over or go to an event once in a while if we think it's safe. But the number, the percentage of time played on your own has gone way up. And I've seen some people experiencing some side effects. I'm going to call them side effects of playing pool in isolation. And so I wanted to tell you what I've thought about this and what I've seen, and then maybe some things you could do to prevent this. So when we talk about, I'll just start right out and say, isolation can drive people insane. Like when we think about insanity just means that we're in the midst of the bell curve of what other people consider normal behavior. And I don't remember where I read this, but it was an interesting conversation about how we need human interactions to stay sane. Because basically what we do is we go out in public and we interact with other people. And based on the things we say, the tone of voice, our body language, we see how people react to things. We see how people's body language reacts, or we see whether they laugh at a joke or whether they kind of look at it like it was in poor taste. And we see people's, you know, when they light up or when they kind of shy away, and all these little thousands and thousands of micro reactions that we don't even really think about. They all steer us down a path of what we consider to be normal and acceptable and kind of standard behavior. And that's what it means to be sane. And so when you take somebody out of that to where they're not getting any feedback and they're not interacting, you know, you keep them away from people for long enough and then you put them back in the public and they're not going to fit in with any kind of societal norm. And so this is the same type of thing I've been seeing with pool. And so what happens when pool players are isolated for too long is that normally people have these little, you know, these narratives that they run in their head as to what they think they're trying to do when they're on the table and how they're going to get better. And a lot of pool players are very perfectionistic and expansive. And so they have extreme ideas on what they're going to do and how it's going to work and how they're going to put their game together. And perfectionism could be a very powerful fuel and driving force. And a lot of good activity can come from that if you control it. But when it's left on its own, it can like go amok. And so some of the things that I've seen, I've listed three things that I've seen students email me. And one is, I've already talked about this, so I'm just going to touch it, but it's the obsession with fundamentals, where people really, really, really get it in their head that they're just going to be a Q testing robot. And that's how they're going to develop their game, is that they're just going to, I mean, I just talked to a guy, he's actually coming out to a boot camp to work with me for 3 days. And when he talked to me, he was like, it was so bizarre, guys. I asked him what his strengths were. And it was like, well, fundamentals, fundamentals, fundamentals. I've worked on my fundamentals. I have a good fundamentals. And then I asked him what his opportunities were, where he thought he could get better. And he's like, well, I think my fundamentals could get better. I'm like, really? It was like, how could that be your strengths and your opportunities? And it was such a bizarre conversation. I told him, I said, I'm either going to be the worst coach or the best coach. Because if you come out here thinking that I'm going to subscribe to your narrative of fundamentals, and then I'm going to just absolutely, that's where I'm going to dive in. Like, we're not going to get along. So, like, if you're coming out here, it's because you need help escaping this insanity, and having somebody else give you some feedback and change the way you look at your pool journey so that you can get the full diet of all the vitamins and not just vitamin fundamental. So that's one. Another one I've seen is a really, really, really obsessive controlling. We talk about self one, self two, inner game of tennis, relationship between the doer and the teller, the ego and the intuitive performer. When people, and this is tied again with, it can be tied to fundamentals, but it can just be tied to perfectionism, which is people can start trying to control too many things, whether it's fundamentals, whether it's pattern play and shot selection, or what they're trying to do. They're looking at all this instruction and they're reading all this stuff and they're trying to figure out, and they start becoming way too analytical about the game and not just flowing and shooting balls in. And somehow when you're in a pool room of people, it gets better. Like, you watch all these, you know, you're sitting there and you watch a bunch of guys just running around the table firing balls in, and it reminds you that the game doesn't have to be so forced and controlled and strangled. But when people are left on their own, man, they, you know, you watch them for a month or two and it gets to the point where they're, it's like the joke about the centipede where you ask them, which leg do you move first when you walk? And the thing freezes up and never moves again. People just make the game way too difficult. And so these types of things are, I don't know. I thought I had another one, but anyway, the point is system overload. I just, for everything, you know, too much information, trying to put too much stuff together. And I would say this, the signs that you might be down the wrong path or that your perfectionism might have run amok, if you're feeling fatigued, if you're feeling like this game is so hard compared to how it used to be, if it's a struggle and a grind, and it's like, it used to be like fun, exciting, flowing, explosive, and now it's just like too much stuff to remember, too much, you're trying too hard, it's too difficult, it's fatiguing, and it's not effective, and you're putting in all this stuff and all this intensity and all this control and all this effort and all this study, and yet on the other side just comes out this little nothing, and you're just like, man, and so then your idea is you're going to work harder and go down this path even further, and it's like the more harder you work, the deeper you dig. And so to me, that's a form of insanity that comes from isolation, and I've seen it even before this year, but it's gotten worse. And there's industries that love it, man, because guess what? The people that are selling to that industry love this. It's like anything that could sell you more, you know, DVDs on which way to point your toes. And I've got the answer. And I think about what percentage of instructors obsess with fundamentals. And this is why is because there's a market for it, because there's a big, big population that's kind of half crazy. But I'm telling you guys, if you find the game becoming difficult, fatiguing, and grindy, then that, you know, that's a sign that you've probably played too much on your own and you need to question your own narratives. So invite a friend over, be safe, be responsible, but like, make it a priority. You can't get to the top of the pool world on your own. You need other people to keep you from going off the rails. And if you've gone too far, this is my time. I got to plug myself, mnpoolbootcamp.com. Come train with me for 3 days. I'll get you on the right track those are some of my thoughts on the effects of isolation. Have you guys seen that?
Well, Rob's better to answer this than I am, probably.
Yeah, I have seen that. That is a fact of the isolation. It's also a fact in pool in general that if you want to get better at the game, you have to have somebody else involved in the game with you, either as a competitor or a mentor. It would definitely help if that person was a better player, more skillful in some regard than you. But yes, there's only so far you're going to go on your own. I don't know if you know a fellow named
unless you're like some sort of ultra competitor, because I mean Jeremy Fedkinauer is a perfect example of that. I mean, that dude mostly plays by himself and he's constantly, constantly, constantly getting better.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Jeremy's. I saw his in the finals of the Masters division at the VNEA, playing against a friend of mine, and his what I saw was a dedication of 100% to every shot he was shooting.
Yeah.
It didn't matter if it was an easy shot. It didn't matter if it was straight in. It didn't matter if it was a 2-inch draw shot or a 14-inch draw shot. He had that 100% dedication on each shot.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on from that, I just want to talk a little bit about the Monday night lessons that I've been doing. Everybody, I guess, out there probably has heard of these by now if you've been listening to the podcast. Every Monday night, I do a free group lesson for anybody who wants to show up between the hours of 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock. So every Monday, we discuss three different major topics, and I've been doing this. I think we decided last night I started in June. So that is just shy of 6 months that we've been doing this. And for the most part, I have not covered any topic twice. So we've talked about just about everything that I could come up with besides a few things. There's a lot of things that I could talk about potentially that at the end of the day, the people that are coming in there are, they're not beginner players, but they're lower tiered players. And some of the topics that we theoretically could talk about are a little out of their execution, comfortable execution zone, maybe I should say. There's no reason to start talking about maximizing and minimizing throw and deflection on balls when, you know, you're not really able to control the bare minimum of throw and deflection on your inside and outside shots, stuff like that, right? So I actually tried that one day. I actually tried doing a let's use outside spin, is what I called the lesson. And what I found was players don't even know how to hit with outside spin and controlling the throw. So it basically turned into an hour of introducing the idea of throw into the shot, and then we couldn't actually practice anything because basically it turned into an hour of players just missing balls by a half a diamond because they couldn't control deflection or throw. So anyways, that's not what I'm here to talk about. What I'm here to talk about is I was hoping that me starting to do this would inspire some people, some places to try to do something of the same thing. It didn't end up working out that way. And I get it. It is a huge, huge, huge commitment. It's 3 hours every week, but it's really more than that. Cause even while, I mean, of course you got to show up for an hour before and an hour after to set up and tear down. It turns into, you know, how do I want to put this to be respectful? When you work with a bunch of students, even in a free capacity, it opens you up to, it kind of gives the players who show up the license to feel like they're your personal billiards coach. And I try to help out as much as I possibly can in quick, easy, precise ways. But what it comes into, or what it turns into, is basically people trying to get me to, I guess, give them an actual billiard plan to get better at the game. And that's not what the heart of what I'm trying to do is. I try to help out, like I said, where I can, but I just can't spend 6-7 hours every single week helping 4 or 5 different players. But again, that's what I'm kind of touching on here. This is a huge, huge, huge investment of time and effort. And I was hoping to have a couple people, even if it's, you know, regionally, just, you know, really small bar, 3-4 people show up, because I'm trying to get to the point where we can start introducing people who want to know about the game, but just don't have the proper instruction. And then because of that, they just end up hitting balls around for a little while, not getting any better because they don't really understand the game. And then they just get frustrated and quit or move on to bowling or golf or whatever it is. And I guess if this is something that you've ever been interested in doing and you wanted to reach out to figure out how to do it in your area, even if it's only maybe once a month or, I don't know, maybe once every couple weeks or whatever it is, I think it'd be a great idea to try to get a little bit more of, to try to get players started in the correct way. So if you're interested in trying to do something like this, please reach out and let me know. But besides that, one other thing I wanted to talk about was, if you're a Wisconsin person and really a greater Madison person, I think we're going to end up taking a couple weeks off from this. And it is mostly coronavirus related. The coronavirus in the area is really starting to get ramped up. I mean, it's been getting ramped up for a while, but it's getting to the point now where it's like, I just can't ignore it anymore. And I just don't feel comfortable running an event or lessons like this with this many people around. I am thinking about trying to do something a little bit unique where I'm not just going to take Monday off. I'm going to try to still get something out for the Patreons, but I'm not, to be honest, I'm not really sure what that looks like yet. So I'm thinking about how I'm going to do that. If you guys have any ideas, or if you just want me to like have discussions on kind of what you want to hear about, please, if you're a Patreon, reach out to me and let me know what you think that you would like to hear about. And maybe I'll just do an hour on Mondays by myself, just kind of talking the ins and outs of whatever the topic is that you want to hear more about. Maybe that's a good way of doing it. I'm not totally sure what it looks like. Like I said, I'm not overly interested in going to the pool hall and doing something in person, though I absolutely could do that. That wouldn't be an issue either. But I guess I'm reaching out to you guys to ask the question, what would you like to see if you're a Patreon in the next couple weeks without me doing live in-person, I guess, coaching lessons? So if you have any ideas, please reach out, let me know. Other than that, that's really what I wanted to talk about for it. Try to make this spread if we possibly can. Let's try to get more people trying to do something like this, or, you know, maybe just, I don't know, doing something to try to spread the game as opposed to just showing up every Tuesday night playing your league, or Wednesday night playing your league and going home.
I got a question for you, Nate.
Go ahead.
Did you at some time with the group of people you've been doing this with talk at length at all about the variety of different types of strokes in the game? It isn't just a point and hit. Okay, it's pools way more than that.
Of course. So that was one thing that I tried to actually do in the beginning, and was one of those things that I also found out that most players at the caliber that are coming to this, they're kind of learning their strokes, right? I mean, even all the way up to like 550, 575, I still feel like a lot of those players are learning their stroke. And if you're a 575 level player and you're taking offense to this, I invite you to try to set a ball in the jaws and set the cue ball in the exact center of the table and try to shoot that shot and draw back to where you started. And literally, so take five shots at it. This is what I always tell people. Take five. If you think you control your stroke pretty well, set a ball in the center of the table, put a donut there, put a ball about one by one, or you can even put it in the jaws if you wanted to, and try to set that shot up, shoot the shot, try to draw back to the spot you're at right now. It's a stroke drill. It is not a rails drill. So just see how close after five shots you are to the center of the table. And of course, this is what you'll find out is this is nearly an impossible drill to even have a chance of doing that. But that's kind of the point is if you can't control your stroke on a shot like that, even one out of five times, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say that most players cannot get within 3 inches, really, I'd almost say 5 inches of where they started. I don't think you could do that one out of five times consistently.
Right.
You're still kind of learning your stroke, right? So we touch on it a little bit, especially in my private lessons. I will touch on that a little bit more there, but it's just such an in-depth topic that it's really hard to discuss in a group setting and be able to give enough individual attention to the person to where they feel like they're getting something out of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it does make sense because if you're at a certain level of understanding and skill, like the combination of the two, there's only so much you're going to be able to take away from that.
And I just to clarify, like, I'm not trying to talk down to like 575s or anything like that. I wouldn't be able to do that. Demetrius, do you think you'd be able to? The little drill that I said?
Yeah, it'd be difficult. I mean, if I was playing on slick new cloth or a bar table, I think so. But I mean, I'd it's really hard when you have a hanging ball. It's hard just to make a straight hit where you know, if you cut that ball at all to either side, it's just not going to come back. I wouldn't like I'll put it this way. If you came into a pool hall and dropped that beyond that, if you just prop that beyond that right now, I'd be like, I don't want to be the sucker. I'm not going to take that bet. Like I'd have to try it before I took the bet.
Yeah. I don't think you could kind of put the ball wherever you want it. I think like it doesn't have to be in the jaws. It can be, you know, 2-3 inches out, whatever you find is best comfortable.
That you said in the jaws, because the hardest thing
that,
to do
that
is
hard. Yeah, that
closer
is
the
difficult.
Ball.
It is pretty hard, but I practiced that exact shot so much that if I could, you know, if the ball was out, so that I didn't have to worry about cutting it as much. If it was like diagonally out a foot, and I was just like, you know, a few feet, you know, 4 feet away, and had to draw back, I might take the bet that I could do one out of five, but I still want to try it first. It's hard, man. It's hard. And you're right. Just to agree with the main point of what you're saying is, you know, when I have people come here, anybody that's at the, you know, a lot of intermediate players and a lot of people that have been playing the game for decades, you know, there's a few things that they have in common, and you've already touched on two of them, Nate. A lot of people have a very quick stroke where their cue, you know, when they either bring it back quick and transition quick and jerk it forward, or they bring it back and jerk it forward. And it's, you know, on so many shots, they jerk their cue forward so fast.
Especially on draw strokes.
And so I had one guy I'm working with that I had a funny saying, and I'll just share it with everybody. I'm like, every shot is born a soft shot, meaning the first couple inches of your stroke, you know, like every shot is born a soft shot. It's amazing at how hard you can hit the cue ball without ever moving your cue stick fast. Your cue stick should never like accelerate really quickly. Like there's just this timing where if you just smoothly move your cue forward, where it's accelerating smoothly, it hits the cue ball. Anyway, so that is definitely something. We're not going into a stroke lesson here, but I will say that I've definitely agreed that many, many, many people struggle with that. And the other thing that I've seen is a very, very, very frequent struggle is exactly what you said about side spin, which is a lot of players have never used side spin. And they think, you know, because what happens is when they try to use side spin, their accuracy with ball pocketing just goes down to the floor. And so then they just shrug and give up and decide that it's just not something that they need to use, or they only use it on hanging balls, or they only use it like a quarter of a tip. And I'll tell you what, a lot of my students that come out and train with me, they think they use side spin, but they never cue more than like half a tip off center, or maybe they think they're cueing a tip off center, and it's like the measles aren't even turning on my measle ball. And I'm like, every time they start hitting off center, they just miss so often that they just want to give up. And I'm like, no, you just can't not use side spin. So anyway, exactly your point, Nate. And those are both things that if you're doing an hour group lesson or a 3 hour group lesson, these are not things that you're going to change. You're not going to get somebody comfortable hitting, you know, 2.5 tips off center and pocketing balls in a group lesson in an hour. And you're not going to teach somebody to smooth out their stroke to where they're not jerking their cue forward in a group lesson in an hour. So it's like, that's where if people are having those types of problems, that's where it takes some one-on-one. It's not going to just be a quick fix.
Yep.
I mean, but I don't want to scare people. It's not a hard fix. It's just, you're not going to do it by, you know, you're not going to do it because of a one-liner that Nate says at a training. You're going to have to put in some work.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, if you set up a straight in shot, say put the ball in the middle of the table, the other cue ball by a corner pocket, and say perfectly straight into the corner, and then set a ball in front of the side pocket, the nearest to the right-hand side pocket to the corner you're shooting in, and now say, make both balls in one shot.
That's a brutal shot.
All it is spin and stroke.
Yeah.
But take somebody under a 600, they're not going to make that shot.
No.
They're not going to pocket both balls.
I don't feel comfortable doing that myself. I wouldn't.
Well,
I can't make that shot more than probably one out of every 10 to 15 times.
Really?
If you're going true corner to corner.
If you played three cushion, you could make that shot.
You'd learn how.
I
mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but where in the heck does that ever come out in three cushion billiards?
If you have an angle where you can't get a good four rail angle shot in, or a natural type of a three rail, you have to fire that ball up in the corner with force follow.
Well, I totally get that, Rob. But that shot is pretty. I gotta assume that shot's pretty rare in three cushion.
The only difference between that shot and this shot is where you hit the cue ball.
Yeah, you know, I just got to assume that.
This
that's
is
a
we're talking
rare
about
shot.
Throw and spin. And that's what you're doing. You know, you're throwing that ball the object ball way to the right, so you're actually cutting it more to the left, so you can get the cue ball to go over to the side pocket.
Yeah.
And the stroke you use has to be a stun stroke, can't be a follow through type stroke.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of different things involved in that shot.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I guess that's really all. I mean, unless either one of you guys have any more questions for me, I guess on that topic, we can move on from there, I think. I guess that's a no. So, well, I guess that's really all we were going to talk about as far as big things today. Tyler Steyer and Jesus were going to be playing a rematch of the same exact format that they had of the 10 ball, Jesus getting the call 9, but that has been postponed. What?
That was 199 was the final score?
No, it was 193, I believe.
Oh.
Dennis and Shane were 120 to 119. But that has been postponed because the backer for Jesus got sick after, I guess, attending the Texas Open. So that has been postponed. And then we are going to be talking next week very in-depth about Tony Choan and Scott Frost and their one-pocket matchup coming up. I think we had kind of decided we're not going to talk too much about it today because... Well, one, we're going to talk about it next week, so there's no reason to jump the gun on it. And two, what we're going to find out is there's just not too much to discuss on
Are there separate Fargo numbers for one pocket?
No. There is not. So, I guess with that, we can kind of just bring this podcast to a close. We don't have any listener questions anymore, so we ran through the entire list of those. If you have any listener questions you would like to ask, take a second right now after this podcast finishes up and head straight over to my profile, Demetrius's profile, Rob's profile, or the Cue It Up podcast page and get us those. Or you could also go to cueituppodcast.com, which is the website for the podcast, and you could submit them there too. Anywhere is fine. Yeah. We will, I guess.
There isn't any question we can't answer.
Yeah, even if the answer is complete BS, we'll BS it with the best of them and have fun with it. All right, so I guess at that point in time, we can just bring this podcast to a close. We didn't have any solid things to talk about today, but we wanted to welcome Rob back. Rob, do you have a joke for us?
I think everything we talked about today, some point in time, we've maybe hit on it in the last year and a half, but I think this particular podcast to any level of player practically is got to be a positive thing if they listen to it.
Yeah. Well, we talked about some fun things. Rob, do you have a joke for us? Are you going to tell us a joke?
I have to have them in front of me. I can't.
Oh, geez, Rob.
I can't. All right. I got one for Rob. Just for a welcome back for Rob. Rob, I got this thesaurus. It was like a discounted kind of knockoff version. The thesaurus was really bad, and it was also bad.
I get it.
Okay.
I get it. I get it. I get that joke.
Yeah, you're a sick individual.
Anytime we have a joke that bad, that just means the podcast is completely wrapped up and just done. Yep.
I think that's the curtains. It's curtains.
Yeah. All right, fellas. Well, another week is done. Thanks for joining me again.
All right, I'll talk to you guys next time.
Okay. See you, fellas. See you, listeners out there. Nate, another great job.
And welcome back, Rob.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for coming to my party. Now that we're all wrapped, bro, it's time to go home.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/cueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.